Session number 12707, Captain Frank Bruce, Reel 23.
Captain Burroughs, Reel 23. True, Captain, the routine in which, or by which, an officer was demobbed.
Yes, well, I've got in my hands now Officer's Release Book Class A, Army Book X-803. And it's stamped HQ Movement Control, 22nd of May, 46, Dover. Personal number, present rank, surname, Christian names, parent regiment or corps, still shown as RAC, not RE. I think I was regarded as seconded there. And this book had umpteen bits to it. One bit was the official release certificate. Army Form X212, release certificate. Emergency Commissioned Officers, Regular Army, Class A release in the UK.
What's the date that it gives?
That is the 8th of July, 46, with a AG... can't make it out. A War Office stamp. The above named has been granted 56 days leave commencing the 23rd of May 46 and is with effect from the 18th of July 46, released from military duty under regulations for release from the Army 1945. So I go equipped with this documentation, having been told that I'll be demobbed at Fulford Barracks, York, military, can't make it out, military something, I think it's probably demobilisation unit, York is the stamp, which says the above named officer proceeded on release leave on the date shown in the military dispersal unit stamp opposite. That's what they were called. Not a demob centre, military dispersal unit. And part of the barracks turned into a sort of clothing warehouse. And it was just a question, very largely, of... well, I would say picking out the best of a bad lot. No, they weren't too bad. I got a grey flannel suit, which actually I wore to later on to my sister-in-law's wedding, so it couldn't have been all that bad. And a green pork pie hat. What else was there? Suit, hat, shoes, socks. Oh, and because it was 1946, a couple of shirts with detached collars, so there had to be collar studs as well. Mac? No, don't think so. Overcoat? No. All done up in a cardboard box, and... back to the station and home. Home at that stage being my parents' home. My wife by that time was expecting our first child. How did I get the gratuity? £129. I think I had an account with Glyn Mills, the army bankers, and I think it was paid into that.
Did you regret leaving the army?
Not particularly. In the latter days, I'd been looking forward to this relief. I'd said in a letter to my wife, come April, you should have the showers and a demobbed husband.
You never had any desire to join the territorials?
No, later on, within about a year, there was some discussion with a colleague of mine at Cramlington School about going back in the Education Corps. Only he'd been in the RAF and he wanted to go into the RAF education branch, and I hardly if I would go back, I'd go to the Army one. And I think if we'd both been in the Army, that could well have happened. But it was a half-hearted thing. One or two of our old DLI buds had at one stage gone to WOSB, War Office Selection Board, for regular commissions, and I think two were sort of put on a shortlist. But home, the mob suit, a youngster on the way, £129, wasn't going to last all that long. So started applying through the local education committee. Start exploring the possibilities of getting a grant to finish off, because I'd been granted a BA degree on a war regulations, and although I hadn't completed the final year. So it was a question of doing dip ed. I went back to Durham and I saw the principal, Karen Braley, and said, well, you know, where are you living now? I said, well, at home, as long as we don't fall out with my parents. He said, well, why don't you do the dip ed at Newcastle at King's? And that is, in fact, what happened. He got accepted there. And I can't for the life of me think of the figures of what the grant was I got. It wasn't by any manner of means exceptional for those days. It would look infinitesimal now. But so I got a teaching diploma from King's and had been applying for jobs with Northumberland Education Committee. And I was asked to present myself for an interview at Cramlington, which was a secondary modern school, in the late August. I should remember this day, because the day I got the letter asking me to present myself for an interview, I went down with polio. Our local doc came, and my face was twisted slightly, and liquids, I couldn't swallow properly, liquids tended to come down my nose, which was a bit awkward. And the doc came, had a look at me when I was talking, and he muttered something about Bell's palsy, and then he said, I'd better have a diphtheria swab. And having done that, he went away. And later, after lunch, he came back again and said, I've been talking to a Polish doctor, a friend of mine, at the Walker Gate Hospital in Newcastle. He said, this swallowing business, he and I have conferred, and we think it could possibly be polio. That was a big epidemic in 47 at the time. And he was pretty forthright. He said, if it goes down over, you want an iron lung, which they've got at Walker Gate. If it goes up over, you want a wooden box, but I want you away from your family. Malcolm, my eldest lad, he was about 1 year old then. However, he had run foul of the local medical officer of health. And when he got word that it was a suspected possible diphtheria case, oh, I had to go off to the local isolation hospital. And there was obviously no love lost between our family doctor and the local medical officer of health, who used to come in reeking of whiskey when I was in hospital. And all that happened was, because our own doctor quizzed me when I was discharged, he said, well, what happened? I said, well, I lay on my back with the minimum of movement for the month or whatever it was, 5 weeks I was in there. And I said, I had 800 cc's of anti-diphtheria serum in the backside. And that was that. He said, no lumbar puncture? I said, what's that? He said, drawing fluid off my spine. No. He said, oh, he probably wouldn't know how to do the bloody thing. Which I thought was extraordinary from one doctor to another. Actually, they nearly did for me. There was a sister, because the units weren't working entirely as they should have been, with this prone position. And I was being given a liberal dose of syrup of figs. And she's dessert spoonful, and she spooned it in one go with me flat, and I just about choked, and I was gesticulating to her because I then got halfway up to pat me on the back and this, and she fled in panic, and I was a bit shaky on my pins, but I managed to get out of bed and doubled myself over, and that was it.
When then did you start going back to your career, or your chosen career?
Well, I was discharged from hospital. Doctor came and saw me. He talked about this. He got me to go to the RVI to see the. He said, "I want the." He says, "Partly vanity." He says, "I want my diagnosis either confirmed or to be told I was barking up the wrong tree." Go and see Mr. McGuckin, the nose, throat, and ear bud. And he had me back two or three times with groups of students peering down my throat to see what was happening. The net result was that one side of the throat packed up. However, who should be the chairman of the governors at Cramlington Secondary Modern School but a certain Dr. Quinn, our family doctor? And they hadn't appointed anybody in the meantime, so I saw the head. I didn't have to go in front of the Board of Governors. I think Quinn probably put a good word in. So I started after what was always called Blackberry Week in the, or Tatey Picking Week in the October of 47.
When you came out of the army, did you find it difficult settling in after 5 years or so, 6 years of army routine?
Well, until late November 47, we didn't have a home of our own. The first part of the time, after the mob, I lived in Monkseaton with my folks, and then later on, I lived with my wife. We lived with my wife's folks along at Seaton Sluice. And it was very amicable, but it wasn't being on our own. Baby was coming. I was travelling daily into the University at Newcastle. This was picking up the academic threads again. There was plenty going on. We had one reunion in the drill hall in Newcastle. And we had a fair attendance. But it was mainly the tail end ones who'd been left in the latter part of being RSE. The others had got scattered, a good few of them had gone west. And there were never any more reunions until 1983. And two or three buds who'd been together in the orderly room got things cracking. And there's been a reunion which has been attended by about three dozen or so each April in a club in South Shields. No, there was plenty going on then, and I was looking forward to getting a dip ed, and hopefully thereafter to start earning some proper money.
Looking back over your army life, was there anything that you feel the army did for you, speaking in terms of the whole of your life in civilian street and everything else, anything actually that came out of your army life which you feel has stood you in good stead?
I got used to living among a crowd of men at Bede. I got a minimal flavour of it through the OTC. I think I got a taste for it through the OTC. I enjoyed the regular parades. How shall I put it? I think because I spent so much time in and out of the regimental headquarters, I think I probably gained a good deal in the way of self-confidence. I'd had quite through being in infantry days a motor contact officer, that is a liaison officer between brigade and division. I'd got used to the atmosphere of senior officers as adjutant. Because I had to set an example in turnout and discipline, I suppose that meant exercising a good deal of self-discipline to sort of set a standard. Yeah, I think if it did nothing else, it did give me a good deal of self-confidence. It didn't increase my abilities as a correspondent. I was forever apologising for not having written more frequently, and that is still with me yet. I did regret not having seen active service. And I was talking to Colonel Bill Watson, and he said, well, there's just a contrast. You see, he said, I was never at home. And he said, and yet you were virtually at home, at least at home in the UK, the whole of the war. And he said, isn't it strange how the contrast? And he said, you were being trained as infantry, as ordinary tanks, as special tanks. And you were hoping that this new secret weapon of yours would put you in the forefront, that you would get a special name and you would be known for working out your brigade that your unit was in, would come to be known as something special. And it all came to naught. I was on draft with the internal to the 8th and I was taken off it. Got as far as King's Cross earlier on. I suppose if I take a selfish personal point of view, I was lucky. Could have been vastly different.
You had no feelings then of any sense of what fighting an enemy might be, that in effect you may have injuries or killed. You just, the thought was there that you just wanted to go.
Well, I'd seen people go away on drafts, on dribs and drabs, but I think it was the idea of going as a unit I've said already, morale was sky high. We thought we were the bee's knees. Once it had reached that stage at Newmarket, when Good kicked me out, if I was honest, I think I was looking forward to Mob Day.